This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. His name is James Oliver Curwood. For a fellow who grew up in Owosso in the late 1800s, he sure made his mark on the world, a prolific writer, filmmaker, and conservationist. When he died in 1927, James Curwood was said to be the highest paid per word author in the world, and much of his passion was fueled by a very close encounter with a grizzly bear. Mitchell Spears is here. He's a filmmaker and a historian, and he's exploring Curwood's life and work in a documentary, God's Country, the James Oliver Curwood story. So good to have you with us,
Thank
Mitch.
You for having me.
So Curwood's born in Owosso in 1878. Tell us a little about his childhood and his family.
Sure. They were not a rich family. They were a pretty standard family for the Owosso area. His father was a cobbler. They lived in an area that was known as West Town in Owosso. And they had a small shop and lived over the shop. Actually, the shop didn't do well. And so about the time he was probably six or seven, they actually ended up moving to Ohio for a short time, which probably began some of his writing fascination. While he was his father and his older brother Ed had actually gone down one winter to check out the property and thought it was a decent area near the Sandusky area and thought it was a good location. So they went ahead and purchased the property. They didn't go back until the spring to move the family down. By that time, the snow had melted, and they realized that they had purchased acres and acres of stone.
Oh.
We have records of them selling back just wagon loads, literally hundreds of wagon loads back to the city for building purposes. But for Curwood, one of his jobs was to pile stone, to build walls. And he talked over and over about during those times of building, during those times of stacking, how his imagination would run wild and he would start writing in his head and really developed his skills while he was still a boy.
When did he begin to make his mark as an author?
Honestly, his first stories were actually published in local newspapers while he was still a child, while he was still a boy. It wasn't until he was in his 20s that his stuff really began to take off. He was writing short stories and that type of thing for magazines and having some success. He was working for a Detroit newspaper at the time, making more money selling short stories than he was for the paper. But that gave him a launching pad to take off from.
So. And what kind of short stories? What were his areas of interest?
Yeah, absolutely. Most everything he was into was wilderness adventure type stuff, but some of those early short stories involved the locations that he had never been to. Maybe he had seen a picture in a magazine and would make up a story about it and literally take off from there.
So. And ultimately, he went on to write 33 books?
33 books.
And 21 made into films. So how does a guy from Owosso become a Hollywood player when there was barely any Hollywood? He was so on the beginning of that.
Absolutely at the beginning. And just as you're saying, 33 books and people tend to remember a couple of them, the film The Bear, which came out in 89, and also the Disney film Nicky, Wild Dog of the North was a very popular film, but those were obviously made well after his death. Mm-hmm. So while he's still alive, he's actually writing what are then called scenarios today. We would call them a screenplay because it was a silent era. And so he was writing hundreds of scenarios, so much so that some of his some of the major editors in the literary industry were constantly sending him telegrams saying, let's not forget that you write books, James, you know, and he was huge in the film industry. He owned three film studios at different times. There was a recent documentary that just came out in this past year about Nell Shipman, who was an actress, a producer, a director, a writer. She's considered possibly the first to hold every title. And she was Curwood's first partner. The first productions company that Curwood had was Shipman Curwood Productions.
That's amazing. He left the Midwest and headed to
did
he continue this from the Midwest?
Yeah, he actually did most of this from his home in Owosso, and that's the ironic part. He would hire people, including Ernie Shipman, Nell's husband, to oversee projects. He was selling projects to people like Louis B. Mayer. He was turning down Cecil B. DeMille. He was, you know, that type of thing. And so he was hugely influential in the industry. And later, it's his relationship with William Randolph Hearst in both the literary areas and the film areas that became a really, really pivotal relationship for him. So
I'm speaking with Mitchell Spears, who's a filmmaker and historian. He's exploring the life of James Oliver Curwood of Owosso, who became a leading Hollywood player when Hollywood was a baby. He is an author and a conservationist. You mentioned The Bear, the 1989 film. Tell us about the close encounter that Curwood had with a grizzly that really seemed to inform much of his life from that point on.
Absolutely. And so Curwood was a big-time game hunter. This was something that actually took up from the time he was a child until late into his life. Hunting was a major part of who he was. His home was filled with his trophies. So for him to take off and head to Canada on a hunting trip and literally be gone for 3, 4, up to 6 or more months was not unusual. He spent a lot of time. 2 years earlier, he had been on a hunting trip with a couple of guys known as the Otto Brothers. They were an outfitting organization out of British Columbia who had taken him on a bear hunt. And he had been tracking a bear for about a week and followed it into a valley and got down on off his horse to take a shot at this bear. And as he was about to pull the trigger, off to his left, he heard some noise and there were two other bears fighting over a carcass. He quietly started to back out because he knew what would happen if he didn't. And then it occurred to him, or I could do something silly. And he estimated that he got off 5 rounds in 30 seconds and took 3 bears. And so to follow that up with a trip 2 years later, again on a hunting trip in British Columbia, they had been tracking a single grizzly for 2 weeks. They were very deep into the wilderness. He thought that he'd maybe hit the animal as many as 3 or 4 times during that 2 weeks, but he couldn't put the animal down. He was a notorious insomniac, wasn't sleeping, got up one morning and said, "This is ridiculous." He threw off his bedroll and started hiking up a trail. He had grabbed a rifle and he started hiking up a trail to, he was going to go watch the sun come up. He was a real nature lover. Got about halfway up the hill and tripped on a rock, almost put himself over the side of the mountain. In an effort to save himself, he did what anybody would do. He just reached out quickly to grab a hold of something, and he grabbed a hold of the rock he had kicked. But in the process, he swung his arm up and smashed his rifle.
Oops.
Didn't think anything about it at the time because he had several weapons back at camp. Continued on to the trail, got to a higher elevation, and sat and watched the sun come up.
Communed with God.
Oh, absolutely.
Communed with nature.
Absolutely. Just, you know, talked about, you know, he would see these things glistening off in the wilderness, and he couldn't figure out what it was, and it suddenly occurs to him, we're looking at hundreds and hundreds of lakes. He could see forever from that elevation and deep northern Canada. And so, you know, he took it all in, got ready to head back to camp, and literally as he stood to pack up and turn around and head back, he heard a noise and he looks up and the only way out is blocked by a bear that he has shot multiple times.
That grizzly he'd been stalking.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And the animal comes in to do exactly what you would expect. He came in to, you know, take care of Curwood, eliminate the problem. And Curwood knew that he had two options. He could go hundreds and hundreds of feet over a cliff to his certain death, or he could take on a bear. But he also had a sense of peace. It suddenly occurred to him that this was nature being nature, and he loved nature. And the animal did, in fact, come into attack, got nose to nose with him, rose up on its hind legs to take a swipe. And for whatever reason, the animal dropped down on all fours, and it turned around and walked back down the path.
There is that old term, a come-to-Jesus moment. I would say that's it.
Absolutely.
Did that change his view of nature and conservation and wildlife?
And honestly, I think he would have always considered himself a conservationist. Hunting didn't conflict with that. It changed everything at that point. Suddenly, he realized that that this animal spared his life. It didn't have to. It spared his life. He got back to camp, broke up camp instantly. Again, they're 2 weeks out. It took him 2 weeks just to get back to a train station. He hops a train back to Owosso and within days begins what he calls preaching the gospel of conservation, began going door to door saying, we have to change what we're doing. It's interesting because he writes an autobiography. The original autobiography was sold in the UK. It was not sold here the way he intended. A different version was sold here. They literally took out a major chapter, which he later released in a book form all its own, and it was about his newfound faith. He goes from Christianity and becomes a devout pantheist, believing that nature is the God, you know, and he finds God in everything he sees, in the rocks, in the sand, in the birds.
Did he ever kill another animal?
You know, he did. It's, for the most part, he talked about himself becoming essentially a vegetarian. Not true. He probably ate meat approximately in the house. They ate meat approximately once a week. But for the most part, it was literally he ate to live, and it was no longer this trophy hunt that he had been on.
Now, he never lost his love of Owosso. He actually, there's a castle you can go to in Owosso that he built?
Castle Museum is still there. It's approximately one block from his home. Most people assume that he probably built the castle to live in. It was simply constructed as a writing studio. It was a quiet place for him to get away to get his work done. So
he's nationally known. He's nationally recognized. But how do we not know about him today?
And that's the huge mystery, and that's what in part what the film is about. You can track his popularity literally a decade after his death. You can pick up a magazine, and he is still the cover story featured writer. In World War II, when they were sending out the cute little care packages to the soldiers, which would be chocolates, which would be, you know, whatever, they would often include little booklets that were novels. And Kerwood's were heavily featured in those packets. So this is still quite some time afterwards. It's about that time, that World War II time, that it seems like he falls off the face of the map. So.
What is it about Kerwood that has hooked you so much that you want to make this documentary God's Country, the James Oliver Kerwood story?
Absolutely. And I think the answer is simple, just that his story is that fascinating. I often compare it to Malcolm X's story. The autobiography of Malcolm X had that same type of effect on me. It was one of those books I couldn't put down. Malcolm X, James Oliver Kerwood, I'm not sure I'm going to say I'm their absolute biggest fans, but their life stories are two of the most fascinating I've ever read. And in each of their cases, they had a come-to-Jesus moment where something major happened in their life and it really affected them.
Well, you're trying to raise money to get this documentary off the ground. Tell us how that's proceeding, and those who want to help, what can they do?
Absolutely. So currently, the what we call the $1 movie project, it's the God's Country, the James Oliver Kerwood story, is on Indiegogo. There is a campaign currently active, and people are welcome to donate. We call it a $1 movie project because, honestly, that's all we're asking. Give me 5 minutes, give me $1. And that's more important to me than you sending me $100. Don't get me wrong, I'll take your $100. But if I could get 100 people to give me $1, that shows more to distributors than one person giving $100. And so that's how we're proceeding with this.
And you feel very, very strongly, I can tell, that there is a market out there and that this story is something needs telling.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Mitchell Spears, filmmaker, historian, the documentary that he's putting together is God's Country, the James Oliver Kerwood story. And you can go to Indiegogo and kick in your dollar. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.